everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Splitting Hairs with Max, Nikki, and Nikon. As usual, I'm Max.
I'm Nikki.
I'm Nikon.
And welcome to...
And together...
Oh, I'm sorry. Together we're...
Max, Nikki, and Nikon.
Oh, that was pretty uniform right there.
That was.
Part of it, yeah.
Well, for us, it sounded like that. You guys, we're recording just a few days before Nikon heads out to Spain, huh? How about that?
That's right. That's jealous? Right. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spain, man. Are you excited or what?
I'm excited. I still have a lot I need to do before I leave, but yeah, I'm excited for it.
I have a lot to do before you leave as well.
Well, you better get on it.
You know, the thing about traveling I hate the most is the preparation. You know, it's annoying. You know,
preparation.
It's just, there's a lot to worry about, I guess. I don't know.
I
mean, especially, you know, the preparation H part of it is really the hardest.
That is true. That is the hardest. Preparation hardest is what it is.
Yeah. Word association. Love it.
So, guys, do we have any podcast news?
Just world news.
It's Persian New Year. Happy Persian New Year to all of you.
Happy Persian New Year. Happy Persian New Year.
You don't have to be Persian to celebrate Persian New Year. It's also the first, you know, it's the beginning of spring and a rebirth and all that kind of stuff. So happy Persian New Year to everybody.
Happy Persian New Year.
Well, this
is the
spring equinox is tomorrow.
Right, but it coincides with that? Was that the idea?
Yeah, it's at the exact moment of the first moment. I think it's today. Spring equinox.
I believe it's on the 21st, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, it's not always. It's not.
It's not always the same day. I believe.
Yeah.
No, it is. Don's joking. I don't know what I'm saying. Cool. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Station business. That's what I wanted to say. Not podcast news, but station business.
Bum ba-dum. Station business. Okay. Any station business, everybody?
As usual, we're reminding you that we have our next Vintage Basement with Max and Nikki show on Saturday, April 15th at 7 p.m. at Young Ethel's in Park Slope in Brooklyn, New York. So check that out. It's going to be free of charge. Donations are accepted. It's going to be a lot of fun.
But you do want to reserve a spot. So go on the Young Ethel's website, I believe.
Yeah.
And then you can, there's an Eventbrite associated with it where you can reserve a ticket.
That's correct, Max.
Anything else? No.
Go to onusoptics.com, buy some Nosebrello sunglasses.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And what makes those Onus Optic sunglasses so special?
They'll protect your nose from the sun. No, there's nothing sexy about nose cancer. Just remember that.
That's very true, Nikon. That's very true.
That's true. I remember back, Nikki and I, for a few years, went to a camp in Catalina, a sleepaway summer camp. It was a week-long camp, summer camp.
It's called Camp Fox.
Called Camp Fox. And I remember getting my nose burnt a couple times.
That's no good.
I know. It was no good.
But Max,
it was nose good. Okay.
But Max would also not only get his nose burnt, but he would get burned by some insults for having a burnt nose.
Oh, well, you don't want that either.
No, you do not. Okay. And I guess moving on to Grammar Corner. Grammar Corner. Grammar Corner.
Does anybody have anything? I don't have anything.
Man, I hate to just not have something for Grammar Corner. I guess we could just debate this real quick.
Okay.
Because this does bother me. Are you guys for or against the Oxford comma? Because I hate to see no Oxford comma. I need that comma there, you know?
I used to be a no Oxford comma guy, but now I always use the Oxford comma, and it's mainly just because I think it's just a better way of clearly writing.
Yes, I agree.
But I don't know. Maybe in my old age, I've started to learn to pick my fights, but it doesn't really bother me to not see it. I just do it myself as a good practice to guide my reader.
In your old age?
My old age.
You know, Nikon, it used to bother me a lot more, but in my old age, I'm learning to pick my battles too.
Yeah.
What about this? It's becoming okay to end a phrase with a preposition.
It's always been okay to do that. It's how the sentence, I think that's like one of the silliest things that like grammar school teachers say as a rule, that they just say it to like as a sweeping thing so that their student, or you know, whatever, your 8-year-old student doesn't do something stupid. But like, there's plenty of ways you can end a sentence with a preposition, and I think it's always been the case.
It's always been the, so you're telling me it's always been the case to be able to say,
give us something to
talk about. He's the guy I wrote the letter to, for instance.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So John is the guy I wrote the letter to.
I would say conversationally, that's okay. Wait. But in an essay?
No, I know. In writing, I'm saying,
right,
John is the guy to whom I wrote a letter, is what you would
sure.
say.
Right. No, sorry. I was. And so you're saying that's now acceptable?
From what I understand, it's becoming more acceptable even in academia.
Even in the classroom setting.
Even in the classroom. I mean, maybe I'm totally
wrong. According to ELA guidelines, yeah, apparently.
Is that true, Nikki?
I think
really?
It's becoming accepted. And you know what? It's going to be a hard adjustment, but I'm okay with it. Believe it or not, I'm okay with it.
I don't believe it, actually. That is surprising that you're okay with it.
I'm surprised that you are okay with it.
It doesn't bother me because...
That's a lot of growth, Nikki. Proud of you.
There have been some instances recently where I've been trying to form the best way to write a certain email, and I'm thinking to myself... The best, most pragmatic way of writing this email is for me to end this sentence in a preposition.
I think that's key. The most pragmatic way, you know, like
sure.
we're living in, like, what is, again, what's best for the audience? Like, is it best for the audience for you to come up like, all right, I wrote it a proper sentence,
right?
But I come off as such an arrogant douchebag, you know.
Right.
That's what's well. Okay. Let's get. This is an interesting topic, actually. When you are writing essays in school, you're writing them. You know, you're not learn. At least in high school, you're not quite learning. Stylistically, how you would eventually might write later on in your life. You're writing kind of the guidelines on how to write an argumentative essay or something like that, or an
sure.
analytical essay. But as you get to college, you might try and find your style a little bit more, but it's still expected to write in these, maybe as we're discussing, in these kind of archaic forms of archaic guidelines that are expected of you to write. But if you were actually delivering that as, you know, addressing others, you know, verbally, but conversationally, even in maybe an academic setting, it might come off still at weird to use the correct, you know, and I use that in quotes, the correct way of speaking, but it just comes off as being, as you say, this sort of this pretentious, pedantic way of speaking. It doesn't seem natural.
Yeah, you know, so... During the quarantine, Max and I wrote a screenplay and a TV pilot, and it was the first time we ever wrote a full-length feature film script. And doing enough of script writing, it made me sort of veer away from the idea of, even in dialogue, not, you know, correctly placing my commas, because you want to sort of indicate or suggest to the actor how, or the reader, how it should be read, rather than the correct way of writing a sentence, right?
Sure. Sure.
Right. And in fact, yeah, one might say, oh, this is the correct way of writing. Yeah, as Nikki said, with commas. Well, anyway, I'm just going to repeat what Nikki just said. So, yeah, I agree with you, Nikki. Yes. I think it's more, even writing an academic essay, you want to convey to the reader how you're thinking and how you're expressing yourself, right? The tone that's in your voice, and you want to get an image, or you want to get an understanding of how the author speaks, and you don't want to just, you know, mess it up with all these commas in there that don't really convey exactly how you're saying something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Thanks for saying what I just said, basically.
Yeah.
It's been a very flexible grammar corner. I feel like we're
very flexible for grammar corner, and I like it. And, Cammy just reminded us that we also did some awesome haircuts for each other during the quarantine, and that is true. Cammy helped us give each other haircuts, and that was pretty awesome.
What does that have to do? That was a non sequitur.
Well, no, Cammy comment, because I said during the quarantine we wrote a screenplay. And
oh,
TV
gotcha,
podcast,
gotcha.
So you guys
gotcha.
Also gave each other haircuts. Anyway.
Well, there you go.
That's true.
All right. So, guys, on to the main topic for today's split.
Hold on.
Hair.
Give me a second. I need to turn this light on. This is killing me.
Yeah, it seems like Nikon's been pretty distracted with some sort of lamp that he's trying to plug in, perhaps.
Plug it in.
But if you're just...
Wait, plug it in? The theme song for Plug It In goes, plug it in, plug it in, right? Is that how it goes?
That's, Dirt Devil or something?
No,
oh,
plug it in.
Gemma Leslie is sick tonight, so she couldn't join us for this podcast episode. But I hope we're sending our good thoughts, and hopefully she gets better soon.
But wait,
yes.
I mean they, rather.
Sure. But it's I'm right about plug it in, right? That the jingle, plug it in, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's
it
how
always
it
reminds
that's for
me.
Glade
it
reminds plugins,
me of,
I think.
Sounds like Say My Name. Say My Name.
It's way before Say My Name. But
no,
everybody...
I know, but I'm saying maybe Say My Name is taken.
Say My Name sounds like it.
They stole it from that. Didn't they?
Say my name. Plug it in. Plug
no,
it
I mean
in.
they're very distinct, but they both repeat the same number of syllables. That's true.
I mean, no, I think Destiny's Child clearly stole that from what Dirt Devil.
One rises and
why
one
are you saying Dirt Devil.
Was it? Not, is it Glade?
Yeah, it's Glade. It's Glade, not Dirt Devil.
Dirt Devil. I mean, I guess you.
I don't think Dirt Devil had a jingle.
Right.
Or well, you want to make
dirt
a jingle
devil,
right now?
Dirt Devil, Dirt Devil.
We should create jingles for brands that don't have jingles, you know?
That's a great idea. On spec.
On spec.
I think that's a great idea.
On spec.
Seriously. Some of them, you know, at some point, somebody's going to.
That's a great idea. What do you think is the most memorable jingle?
That's a billion-dollar business idea.
I mean, I would say that. Empire Today has got one of the most memorable jingles, I think.
Well, Empire Today? I've never even heard of Empire Today.
800-588-2300 Empire Today.
Oh, man. All right. I do recognize it, but, like, honestly, I don't know. You line up five different brand names, and I wouldn't have guessed Empire Today was associated with that jingle.
Well, what is so genius about that jingle, at least for us, is that the phone number is in the jingle, so you know what to call based on the jingle.
It's true. That's
wait, what's the number again? 800-588-2300. That's
Empire
the number. Okay, great. Let's
today.
Call.
Oh, it's a very good jingle for all those reasons. You have the phone
all
number
right, so that's
in
your
the
top,
lyrics.
That's your favorite jingle?
Well, it's one.
No,
of them.
I think, you know, of course, Barry Manilow wrote two very distinct, memorable ones. He wrote... Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm is... Like a Good Neighbor,
nope.
State Farm is there.
I didn't know he wrote that one.
He did.
Wow.
And he also wrote I'm Stuck on Band-Aids because Band-Aids are stuck on me.
That's a solid one, too.
That's one.
He wrote jingles, memorable
that
ones.
That one sounds similar to I Like the Fishes.
I was going
to so
say...
delicious.
Ah, goldfish.
Gonna go fishing or whatever. Is that for goldfish?
Goldfish, yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, this is an interesting one, by the way. Da, 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 I'm loving it. You know that was written as
a full song.
It was written as a full song that Justin Timberlake sings, actually.
What?
And yeah, look it up. And it's written by the Neptunes.
What?
You know,
Pharrell.
Pharrell. And Chad. They, I don't know which one was written first, whether or not they wrote the jingle for McDonald's at first or vice versa.
But is that correct?
It ended up, then Justin Timberlake ended up doing it, you know, as a full song. I don't know if it was first before they gave it to McDonald's or if it was written originally for McDonald's.
That's insane. I'm looking it up right now, and you're right.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Isn't that interesting?
We're in Lone Stuff. I do not know
it.
Yeah, it's good pretty crazy. Yeah, and I read that Justin Timberlake kind of regrets recording it. I don't know why.
Why?
I don't know.
He regrets the probably millions of dollars that have landed in his lap for singing like half of a...
I know. Bryce Shell just suggested
it's,
be my
it's
buddy.
Half of a thought. It's not even a full thought. I'm loving it.
I know. I'm what loving it? It. Well, no, the whole song is probably more than that.
Oh,
you know what's
a
really good?
There's
a whole song that I think it appears on his solo debut album. I believe.
Is that right?
I think.
Yeah, it's listed as 3 minutes and 42 seconds long.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Check it out, guys.
I think we need to pause right now so we can listen to it.
I will say this. I think one of my favorite jingles, it's a really just a great song, is the Coca-Cola one, you know?
Oh, no, the one from the early 90s.
Always Coca-Cola. There's a whole straight-up song. You can check it on YouTube. From the early 90s, they did a whole... like the whole song of it on a commercial, and it's
I remember that. It's really catchy.
It's really
speaking
good.
Of whole song. I like the Huggies one. Mommy, wow, I'm a big. But that's a whole song leading up to it too. It's like da 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 da.
No, you're right.
That's true.
My buddy is
my my buddy.
Oh, my buddies.
My buddy and me.
Oh, you know what I like?
Mr. Bucket. You guys remember Mr.
Boy,
Bucket?
How does that go?
Mr. Bucket.
Oh, yeah. Right.
There's something about like balls going into the mouth. It's actually kind of silly.
Oh, you know what I like is
Mr. Bucket.
This is an old one, guys. Is whatever it is, I think I see becomes a Tootsie Roll to me. There's a whole song for that too. Not just that little snippet, but there's quite a bit to it.
So that one's
anyway,
cool.
We could keep going on about jingles.
Man, I wish I can get in on the jingle game. You know, make some.
I
of that,
think you can.
Make
I
some
think
of that jingle
let's
dough.
Start
you
make
know?
That. Yeah, let's start making them on spec.
Well, Max has got one. Do you want to share the one that you have, Max?
No, because you know, it's
no,
he doesn't want anybody.
No,
steal
if
it.
You go on record doing it, nobody can steal it. This is great. It's actually better to go on record right now.
That's true. I guess so.
Because
okay.
If I sell it, then you guys can be like, hey, I recorded this at this time. You know.
That's true. So this is my this would be for
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if that's
well actually your sisters though. You actually technically are right, Nikon. If you copyright it though and you go to court over it, and it's found in your favor. Copywriting it basically guarantees that the other party has to pay your legal fees as well.
Oh,
but
nice.
If it's not copywritten and you sue over it, they don't have to pay your legal fees.
Gotcha.
So, Max, why don't you share your jingle for cranberry juice, like a
an
ocean
spray
or something?
So
it's very short.
You know, you have some sort of opera singer, and he'd be like, "I want the cranberry." Cranberry juice. Anyway, that's what it is.
That's good.
I mean, if anybody tuning in knows anybody that can get us in on the jingle game, please hire us. We are musicians. We write songs, and we can write some good jingles.
Well,
I guarantee
it. The way jingles are done now, though, is...
algorithms?
They have people write jingles, or they're not so much as jingly as they used to be, but the way you get hired to do music for commercials is
you have to have the whole thing already produced and everything, because you everyone can produce their songs at home nowadays.
That's
so
different.
You
that's
have to
different.
Submit. They basically take submissions. Or
no,
something.
That's
no,
different. That's different. Obnoxious. I mean, our sister's husband has done music for commercials in the past.
Yes.
Oh, so you already know who to talk to.
No, but Max, no, that's not jingle writing. That's a different thing. That's just writing sort of, I guess, background music for a commercial. Like he did a streak of Lowe's commercials, which it was just kind of sound effects, you know?
No, sure, I know, but sure. The point I'm trying to make is I don't think that they'll go off of like your demo. I think they just have like, okay, write a song. It's got to be fully produced and everything, and we'll pick the best one.
Maybe that's true.
I think that's how it works now.
You know, listen, I don't think who cares. This is what I think you guys should do, and I want to end on this too, because and also I need you guys to
you can be our jingle manager
to talk. I want to talk to you guys about writing music for a musical too, but
oh yeah, that's right.
But why not just start a TikTok account where every day you post a new jingle about just some bottled water, like generic stuff to start out with.
Sure.
Right? And you just pump out a ton of it until you get traction. People start following you. And then
this
you
is
know,
a
one
great
of these,
idea,
one of these
Nikon.
Brands, some bottled water brand is going to be like, we want that jingle to represent
Poland
us.
Poland Spring. I like
no,
the
it's gotta
way
be more generic.
You feel.
No, well, that's like Folgers in your cup.
Specific ones. You
sounds like Folgers. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Honestly, I think that might be the most satisfying.
Because
jingle.
It's a very evocative of being getting up, actually, and having
drinking a cup of coffee.
But and like if you think about and the whole song too, it really builds to that moment.
Sure.
Like especially the a cappella version where it's like a shoe bop doo wop. Oh, the best part of waking
up. Actually,
the best
okay.
Part of waking up is Folgers in your.
But I kind of like the kind of country, you know, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
A rabbit hole, though. I really like the is it Ford Like a Rock? But that's a Bob
no.
Seger song.
Oh, that's
right?
A Bob Seger
that's
song.
Jingle, I guess, yeah.
Right.
Well, anyway. What about we'll end the jingle portion of this podcast episode with this one.
Do we have to have a jingle for this, the jingle portion?
Yeah. This now it's a new segment that we're locked into forever.
This one, Frosted Flakes are more than good.
They're great.
That's a real jingle, or you just made
it
that
is
up?
A real
that's jingle.
Jingle
for Frosted Flakes.
Not memorable at all. I don't I've
what
or,
are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't remember it.
Well, just okay. I just want to end with
you know the Toys R Us one though, of course, right?
Oh, of course.
I don't want to go up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
That's a nice one too when they do the whole song.
Oh,
a,
I love when
that's
I
got
remember,
some sweet. Sweet
watching Rosie O'Donnell
too.
In those, right?
Really?
Yeah, she was in them for a little bit.
But she
bit.
Was also in the Kmart commercials,
that's
right?
Not a jingle, though. Does that count as a jingle?
What?
The Rosie, Toys R Us, because it's a full song. I guess, yeah.
No, it is. I mean, yeah, okay. A jingle is basically...
Hold on, guys. We're forgetting about the most iconic one, probably, and that's the Oscar Mayer Wiener one, right?
Oh, God, I forgot about that. And that is a whole... We
oh,
actually,
I wish I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Sure.
That is what I truly like to be. Because if I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, then everyone would be in love with me.
That is a good way to end that segment.
Yes, yeah. Okay.
Perfect
all right,
harmony.
On to the topic... The main topic, the main.
Well, Nikki, you had an idea.
I had an idea, and
yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it's the main topic.
Okay, I wanted to debate method acting.
Oh,
okay.
American method act or what?
Well, it depends on what you mean by method acting. You're talking about the one that like Strasberg style method acting.
Yeah, Lee Strasberg method style acting, because. Frankly, I don't really agree with it. I don't like it.
You don't agree with it?
I don't think it's acting necessarily. I mean, it is, but it isn't.
But, okay, well, I think
that's... Now, let me know if you like that as a topic.
Insane thing to say.
What's that?
I said, I think that's an insane thing to say. But I also am not an actor. You guys are actors. I don't act. So I feel like I don't have...
You made a pilot before where you acted in it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, with no training or... I mean, I guess... I don't know if you... all right. Well, we can talk about it.
That doesn't have to be the topic. I'm just saying that's an idea.
Well, the fact that it got such a rise out of me, I feel like maybe it is worth debating.
All right. All right.
Because I think that's insane.
Well,
But again, I'm not... I have to do my Lee Strasberg. And okay, well, yeah, should we do that? Do we want to?
Max, I mean, sure, I guess. Yeah, okay, sure. Why not?
We got to talk about something. Why not this?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't have any other ideas right now, actually.
Yeah, I have an idea, but I'll save it for another time.
Okay. Wow, you do have an idea. All right.
Oh, I got ideas for days, baby. I'm going to write it down.
Are you sure you don't want to mention them?
Mention the idea. Mention the idea.
Maybe it's worth...
No, because that way, I don't know. Should I don't know. Well, now it's been built up, so I'm definitely not going to.
What? Now I really want to know.
I'll tell you guys after. I'll tell you after.
All right. Okay, so method acting. Now, we're specifically debating Lee Strasberg method acting as opposed to Stanislavski method acting.
So you're definitely going to have to go into the explanations
of
those.
Well, and as opposed to all of Stanislavski's disciples, too.
Yeah,
you know,
now
Stella Adler.
This is kind of a niche topic for an episode, right?
This is a niche
topic. Well, of course it is. Yeah, this is
extremely
niche.
I mean... We went from jingles.
You even have an opinion on it, to be honest. But because you do, it's making me have a strong
opinion.
I'll
talk about it in a way where everybody can understand and inform their own opinions about whether or not they like this type of acting.
Well, let's get on into it, shall we?
Okay. Having a moderator on this? I was a moderator last time, but I... Since Nikki brought it up and he seems to feel really passionate, but I'll be moderator again because Nikon, it got a rise out of you and you kind of...
I can be moderator, but I will not be fair and balanced.
Well, I'll try to be somewhat more fair and balanced. I tend to lean towards Nikki, inclined towards what Nikki's saying, but part of me also thinks... You know, whatever gets the job done. So,
all right. You're a fit moderator, I think, in this case.
All right. So, let's get in. Whoa, what are you doing, Nikki?
I'm just...
Oh, okay.
Kind of coming through really pale.
Sorry. I said, what are you doing, Nikki?
For the
Nikki.
Listeners, Nikki's hand left frame and entered Max's. And then Max said, oh, what are you doing, Nikki?
No, that's not what I meant. Nikon, look at this. Yeah. Look at the delay right here.
Oh, on Instagram? Yeah, it's crazy. I'm surprised we're having a coherent conversation on Instagram because, well, I guess if we're listening on our computers, you guys are listening on your computers.
Absolutely.
So the timing, while delayed, is still in sync.
Right.
All right, Stanislavski.
Okay. NSYNC, Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
Da, 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 da. I'm loving it. And we're all back to square one.
Get into it.
Here's the thing. Before we get into it.
Konstantin Stanislavski.
It is important to define our terms, obviously.
Well, and define our people and who we're talking about. Okay, so Strasberg method acting.
Just a little bit of history on this, guys, real
quickly.
Oh,
you don't like Stanislavski or you don't like Strasberg?
No, I think I like Stanislavski. I don't like Lee Strasberg.
All right, so yeah, you got to explain. I don't know the difference
between
any of these.
Okay, so Stanislavski, basically, he taught a bunch of pupils about acting, and a lot of them moved to America and formed the group theater acting company, which included a lot of famous people like Stanford Meisner, Stella Adler, Lee Strasberg.
All these people would end up becoming pedagogues
yeah,
in, for acting, in acting.
Elia Kazan, some of them would go on to become very successful directors.
Hey, that's Zoe Kazan's grandfather.
That's right. Kind of a controversial figure because he named names. You know, McCarthy area. Seinfeld episode.
You got me blacklisted at Hop Sings. So the idea here is that Stanislavski, he taught all of these students about his approach to acting that would get at the root of the best performance that you could possibly have. And the idea behind that is imagining the given circumstances and physicalizing your role to a point that eventually real emotions would come out of you if you physicalize it enough.
This is Stanislavski.
That's basically the sort of crux of what Stanislavski taught.
Oh, just so you know,
that's what the method is, correct?
When people talk about the method these days, they're referring to Lee Strasberg's method acting.
Oh, right? Okay. All right. So we're jumping
ahead. So, hold on. Let me just say, before Stanislavski, acting was done in a more kind of outwardly manner. You kind of expressed your emotions.
That's not exactly true.
No, that's not true. What are you talking about?
So,
yes?
This is Stanislavski had, you know, these methods.
I'm in over my head.
British actors, for example, never even adhered to this kind of stuff at all. And most of them continue not to adhere to this. They just, in my opinion, they do the right thing is they pretend. They know they're acting and pulling the wool over the audience's eyes.
Anyway, let me just say in general, before Stanislavski, actors tended often, at least maybe in America,
to be more presentational.
To be more presentational where they're acting.
Okay.
And as opposed to...
Presentational meaning exaggerative or what?
Yeah, just kind of showing their emotions to the audience.
Hamming it up.
Yeah.
Max, I can't agree with you on this. Okay.
I'm sorry to disagree with you, but it's super important.
Is the specifics of the history super important?
We don't have to get super specific, but let's just say actors before Marlon Brando, let's just look at them, for instance. Okay, you know, he was
Strasberg, right? Brando was from the Strasburg.
No, that's not true. He was more of a Adler.
But anyway, there was a difference between his style of acting and then the actors that came before him, right?
Exactly. But
this
Max,
is what I'm talking about, though. Anyway,
but I still those, think, like, Jimmy, some of those were Jimmy presumably was Stanislavski not, actors as well.
What's that?
I said some of those people before Brando were presumably Stanislavski actors as well. Right.
You're right about that.
I don't think that.
But Max, somebody like Jimmy Stewart, who is such a great actor and very real to me, was not outwardly presentational,
know,
and he was not a sad Stanislavski. That's what I'm trying to say.
He was outwardly presentational.
That's just how he spoke.
Wait a second, Mary Ladders. George and Larry. They took your money.
All right, so. So what's your opening argument?
Lee Strasberg method acting,
Hold on.
What decades did Stanislavski come in and become influential? And then when was Strasberg
Stanislavski, I think he was big in the early 1900s to maybe the 20s or something like that. But the group
Do we know any actors that were under his tutelage?
Well, yeah. I mean, these people that I mentioned, Lee Strasberg, Stella Adler, Sanford Meisner.
They're more known as teachers.
Elia Kazan became more of a director.
By the way, Lee Strasberg was not actually a direct student of Stanislavski, while Stella Adler was. Anyway, that's just an interesting thing to note.
These guys, all of them, Harold... Klerman or something like that, playwright. Okay. Anyway,
Harold and Kumar.
Anyway, they started the group theater in New York in the 30s, and eventually the Actors Studio was born out of that.
Actors Studio.
It's the famous Actors Studio. That's
of What's his name? Fame.
It's at Pace now.
James Lipton.
No, it's James, at, of it's James Lipton school,
fame. Yeah.
Yeah, James Lipton fame. Yeah.
But the idea here is that Stella Adler was a kind of abided strictly about what Stanislavski said, and Lee Strasberg was like, you know what? I know what Stanislavski said, but I think what I'm saying is more correct. And this is what he said.
No, hold on. T.O.
I like that.
I need to correct you on this. He was a little more, Stanislavski was maybe a little vague on some things. And I think they each had their own interpretation of his methods.
No, Max.
Perhaps intentionally vague.
Lee Strasberg, Stella Adler said, Lee, you're doing it wrong. This is not what you're supposed to be teaching. And Lee Strasberg said, I don't care. This is the way I think it should be.
That's not what I he understand. Did.
I respect that.
Max, okay, let's not quibble about this. Okay.
Anyway.
But Lee Strasberg, basically, his idea is that basically sense memory kind of stuff, where you basically use
past experiences to give you emotional perspective.
And basically, if you need to cry in a scene, you think about something that made you cry in the past in your own life, and it makes you cry in the moment.
And what is it about that you don't like?
Because it's not really acting.
Well, hold on.
How is it not acting?
Okay, so
what is acting?
This is an opening statement here.
But another part of Lee Strasberg method acting is living as your character outside of the production. You know,
like a Daniel Day-Lewis
is a perfect example of this. Okay, so
yeah,
here is my whole thing on
this.
This is my opening statement.
This is still your opening statement.
Oh no, that was his.
No, you're right. You were giving a lot of background
info. Now this is his opening argument. Go ahead.
Lee Strasberg method act. I will say this: whatever works, fine. Okay, that's cool.
That's my whole argument.
I just don't think that Lee Strasberg method acting is really acting. It's just being yourself.
So?
And that's kind of cool. But on stage, you need to be able to move on to the next scene. And if you're too emotionally invested in a scene, you could eventually possibly have a breakdown on stage, like Daniel Day-Lewis did during his production of Hamlet, where he actually thought he saw the real ghost of his dead father. And he walked off stage and said, I'm never going to do a stage play ever again. And I think there's a problem there with that kind of method acting, that being that serious. If you can't perform on stage, that's messed up. And so
another example.
Jeremy Strong of Succession fame, he was actually Daniel Day-Lewis's assistant. And he's known to cause a lot of sort of annoyance in the production of Succession.
Well, delays.
Especially much to the chagrin of Brian Cox, who's a British actor who comes from a very traditional way of acting. And anyway, it annoyed him because he was like, look, you got to be able to enjoy the fun of being in a cast and you know, you can't take things too seriously. But then again, Jeremy Strong is really good on the show.
I just want to give another example of Daniel Day-Lewis. Lewis in My Left Foot, where he plays a paraplegic, I believe he had people carry him to the set, actually.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous. That's what I heard that.
It's ridiculous, but who cares? I don't know. I guess
people care, actually. All right.
Well,
anyway, Nikon, opening
argument. But they're getting paid to carry him. It's not like, you know, they're getting paid. It's a shitty job, but so is, I don't know, shoveling shit.
That's actually a shitty job, so to speak.
Yes, it's quite literally. I don't know. I just don't even. I guess I'm still confused. Like, what are you just saying? You don't want to be a Lee Strasberg method actor? What is the argument?
Theoretically, I have a problem with it.
Like, are you saying it shouldn't exist? You're certainly not denying that it has produced some of the great actors in modern history.
It has.
I'm not going to list all of them, but there's many.
Okay, page. That's an interesting.
So
notion.
is your opening statement a question for us?
Well,
Freddie?
I guess I'm no. I what is your
well? Okay,
your opening
then
I'm saying. I don't think it's real acting.
Well, the way you're saying it,
so you're saying
is,
you don't think it's real acting. That's what you're saying.
Yes. What I don't think... I have a problem with it. If I were in a cast with somebody who was a method actor,
yeah,
I probably would have a problem with them, you know?
Sure. But like, okay. What is my counterpoint supposed to be?
Let
like,
me just to like phrase I, it in a different way. Nikon, you're saying, sure. Okay, if the results get you what you want, then it's okay. But that's, you could say that about, are you saying the ends justify the means? I mean, for instance,
not in a sweeping way. No, not like.
So explain. So for instance, if somebody is having emotional problems in their personal life as a due to the fact that they're method acting, then is it okay to be doing this method acting? You know, then that's the point Nikki's trying to make, is that it's not really healthy. It's not a good, it's not a good way.
It's not psychologically healthy.
It's not healthy. It's not, Nikki's opinion, it's not acting, whatever that's supposed to mean. But in other words, is it, he thinks it just shouldn't, he doesn't think it should exist because it's not.
You're saying it's dangerous.
Yes. It can be dangerous. Yeah.
Dangerous for your psyche.
And yeah, but okay, but for so those can around. Acting in general. So can being a bus driver. So can going into finance. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess. Okay, well, let's talk about this idea of it not being real acting, because I think that's interesting, because to me, if you are delivering lines in front of an audience, whether it's on film or live, that's acting. You can be really, really bad at it. You could literally just say the words out loud.
But if you're
you know, and I don't even want to like tie myself down to delivering lines or whatever, if it's an improvisational acting, whatever, but if you're standing in front of an audience and presenting a story in some way, that is acting. And that's again, I'll go back to, you can be really bad at it. There are plenty, you know, like, part of stand-up is acting, whether the comic wants to acknowledge it.
Very much
it or,
so.
Was that?
It's very much so acting.
Very much so, but some people just say, well, you know, I'm just like, I'm writing on stage or whatever it is. But even that, like, you're performing. Acting.
They're performing acting. Memorized
some
lines
people,
for the most part.
Some people choose to engage in it. Some people do it in a, you know, in a more serious way, the acting part. But it's all acting. Some people are bad at it. Some people are good at it. Some people
most
think
people
about,
are bad at it.
Most whatever it is, and however, and so whatever you need to do in order to get through it, I don't care, and so you can only assess a person's method, using that term generally, on the output. So if Daniel Day-Lewis does some of the greatest performances in your like that I've seen, I don't care how he did it. I think it's amusing. I think it's very funny to hear about like all of the things that he does off on an offset. I find it funny.
I think it's more impressive.
Crazy that he stormed off Hamlet with, you know, but that's funny to me. And okay. Yes. So, okay. So what?
He can't do his job on stage then. Right.
Who's to say that that's because of the specific method that he chose to dedicate himself to, or if he's just kind of a kook anyway, and if he was doing whatever, the traditional British style of acting, he wouldn't have come out the same way on Hamlet, you know? Like, Hamlet's, I don't know, it's a tough...
Well, maybe the theater was haunted, and maybe he actually thought, "Oh my
maybe
god,
he was
I think
actually,
I saw a ghost."
Yeah, we're not giving.
We're not
him...
sure if it was with the, it was the method that was causing.
Maybe
him to
he
see
actually
the ghost.
Did see the ghost of his dead father.
Yeah. So,
well, listen, I do want to bring up other actors whose acting is so good, and you wouldn't know it, that they are completely void of emotion internally, but expressing that differently outwardly.
Time out. Let me just interject here. I don't think you could be completely void of emotion when you're acting.
Well, that's
even,
the idea.
Even if you are not method acting per se, you still are deriving something from some experience that you've had as a human being to be able to portray this character.
Sure, that's true.
So you are,
you are in a way using some measure of method in a way. I mean,
William
just because you're a human, you know?
William H. Macy, yeah. He is
a fine actor.
Very good actor. And he has said, and this is kind of the school of thought for the Atlantic Theater Company and David Mamet too. They have said
Atlantic Theater Company was started by David Mamet and William H. Macy. Yeah. Just defining.
And he says that if I need to cry in a scene, give me some Vicks vapor rub, put it under my eyes, whatever I need to do to be able to move on to the next scene. Because at the end of the day, I need to be able to stop crying at a certain point, wipe off that Vicks vapor rub, and be able to move on to the next scene. If I can't do it, I'm not doing my job. He says, I don't like to feel something because if I get too emotionally invested, then there's a chance that it could affect my performance in a negative way, especially on stage when the whole idea of rehearsing is to get to a point where you know exactly what you're doing on stage at all times.
That works for him.
Yeah.
It works so well for him that you can't even tell. Look at his performance in Fargo. It's so good.
We're not going to go down the line and compare this actor to that actor who did use the method, who didn't use the method, whatever. As you say this, though, I'm not going to like say this as like what I really think, but it feels to me as though a William H. Macy sees acting as more of just a gig, and a Daniel Day-Lewis, let me finish, sees acting as more of an art.
Disagree totally.
Just saying it out loud so it's said.
I think you switch those around. I think Daniel Day-Lewis sees it more as a gig, and therefore he's doing whatever he can to do the gig well. Whereas William H. Macy is saying, hey, I want to have fun with this job.
Sure.
So how can you have fun if you're actually...
But everything
sad.
You just said, everything you just
and not
said
getting along with the
cast.
I just want to just interject here. Those two things aren't mutually exclusive. Being
no, of course
gig
not.
And
that's
art,
right.
And it depends on what you think of as art. You know, that's a whole nother conversation to
have.
But that's like saying that's like
true.
The difference between Beethoven and Rossini at the time. They both were.
Those are the examples you brought up.
Well, because they both existed at the same time, but they had vastly different ideas about what art was. You know,
sure.
Beethoven was a true romantic. He started the ideal of like, I'm a composer. What I write matters. If nobody else cares about it, whatever. Rossini, on the other hand, who existed during that time, was like, no, I need to pay. I want to make enough money so I can retire early. But he made some of the most fantastic music of all time.
He was writing jingles, baby.
He was writing jingles. And there's an art to that, too. Anyway.
Hey, and you know
what? There's an art to it. But is there a difference between being an artisan and an artist? I don't know.
Mozart was the same way, by the way. Mozart wanted to get it.
I'm not here to judge the merits. I'm not saying one's better than the other, by the way, either. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Well, I just think
when you put it in those terms, when you say like, I just need to do what I need to do in order for us to move the sticks to the next shot, blah, blah, blah. That seems like more of like, you know, a workman. Whereas like you cannot, you lost me at Daniel Day-Lewis seeing acting as just a job. Like you completely lost me there. Like,
no, I didn't. I think he said, look, I'm getting hired to do this thing and I'm getting paid a lot of money for it. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to deliver the goods. But at what cost? Right. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah, okay. I was just saying, like I said, I didn't mean to like draw a line in the sand, but I do. It does seem that way, qualitatively, when you say like, when the words you were using, but it's okay.
I mean,
I'm stepping back from it.
Yeah, well, that's basically like saying that all these, and not all of them, because Daniel Day-Lewis is British, but a lot of these British actors. You're saying they're not artists, but
I didn't say that. I said the way I said it.
You said those exact words.
I just say those exact words.
I know, I'm just joking.
What I said was the way you described it, the way you described that distinction sounds like William H. Macy sees acting as more of a job, and Daniel Day-Lewis sees it more as an art. But again, I'm not, you know.
Again, I do want to
move on.
Those things aren't mutually exclusive anyway.
It was just a thing. It was an observation.
Sure.
I think
whatever,
there was
a reaction.
This is an often told story about the filming of Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier. And we're not sure if it's true or not, but there's a scene where Dustin Hoffman has to appear really exhausted from something, from running a long distance. Yeah. And
he's a Strasburg actor for the audience.
Yeah. And I would say he is one of the greatest actors of all time, but he has said, the story goes that they kept on having to reshoot these takes, and Dustin Hoffman kept on having to go really far back and running back down the street so many times. And he kept getting so exhausted that it was harder and harder for him to do each take. And Laurence Olivier said, "Well, have you ever tried acting?"
That's so British and hilarious.
Exactly.
That reminds me of, wasn't Dog Day Afternoon, like, didn't they do like 1,000 takes of a certain scene until Pacino was like losing his mind, and it was like the final take. Yeah, I got it, because that was who directed
Pacino,
that?
One of our greatest actors too,
Sidney Lumet. How do you
pronounce it?
I thought it was Lumet,
I've heard it Lumet lately.
I have too. Anyway,
very good movie. John
very
Cazale,
good movie.
Late
Pacino is one of the greats.
Chris Sarandon's really good in it too.
I gotta revisit that movie. That's like a really good movie.
And what's also an interesting distinction about that movie, guys? Isn't there no music in that movie, something like that, except for the beginning and the end, or something? Am I right about that? That's a thing about that movie, which is really cool, I think.
I'm not going to be able to read it all. Skim Wikipedia and that.
Pacino
moment,
was one during the 70s. I mean, he had a great streak of performances, right?
I mean, he still does. I just don't think that everything he does is necessarily as iconic
if we're going to take anything from this conversation, it's that film was at its greatest in the 70s.
This is a good conversation to have for another time. What's the best decade for movies?
That's a great conversation.
I'm
not even going to respond to what you just said, because that's going to take us down a totally different. Let's
but you agree
stress.
With it, right?
Not necessarily is what he's trying to say.
I ran out of batteries. I never do.
Oh,
but
yeah, you're dead.
I did. So
wow, Nikki's ran out of batteries.
This is me right here.
Great. Nikki's doing what I did last time.
I love it. I think it's the best thing we do.
I think it is. It should be a recurring segment.
Yeah.
Okay. The puppet
all right,
segment.
So is there anything like... Okay, so we talked about the whether it's acting or not. Are you convinced by anything I said? Like, do you still not think that it's acting?
No. Okay. At its purest sense of the definition, I think that acting is pretend. And when you're not pretending, you're not acting, you're doing something else.
I think that's an unnecessary restriction on the definition of acting. Why does it have to be pretend?
In the same way that I feel...
I'm saying at its purest form, I'm not... What does that mean in its purest form?
I mean,
in the same way that art,
you know, we don't want to restrict the definition of art, whatever that's supposed to mean. That's the same thing as not restricting the definition of acting. What does it mean to be acting? It's just what is it, and it's bare bones. What is acting? It's saying lines on stage and delivering them. That's what it is, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I would even go more elemental and say it's
performing on stage.
Performative expression. I'd say, is there a more foundational definition of art than human expression in various mediums?
Right, that seems that's like what a good it is. That's pretty much what it is.
So for acting, you would just say it's human expression through performance, or narrative,
through dialogue, through speaking.
Well, it doesn't have to be speaking. You do, Charlie that's Chaplin, true. One of the greatest actors
that's
of all
true.
Time. Charlie
that's
Chaplin.
True. In fact, they say the best acting is reacting, and you don't have to say anything to do that. But I guess what I mean is, I'm trying to make a distinction between singing or playing an instrument.
Sure, I get it, but I don't know how to. Well, okay. I don't see where the pretending part comes into the the purest definition of acting.
Right. Well, this is what I want to say though. When you audition,
is a still life any which is, you're painting what you are actually seeing. Okay, actually, take that away. Is it any more or less of an art to paint a memory that you had, or to paint something that from your imagination? It's three options: paint something from a memory, paint something from your pure imagination, or paint something that's in front of you. Is any of those more or less of an art?
I would say this. I think something from your pure imagination may be none of it is lesser art, but I think maybe I respect something out of your pure imagination the most.
I don't agree with that, actually. I don't agree with that at all.
Because, it depends on the style you're going for, but for me to look at a painting and think, wow, this person thought this up, they imagined this, as opposed to looking at a photograph or looking at an actual model and painting, I feel like that is more skill, I guess, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, an artist often, especially back in the day, they might pose the model in a certain way, so that is coming from their imagination to pose them in a specific way, and they're still
and a lot of it is
in front of them,
and a lot of it is in their interpretation. I mean,
exactly.
Picasso portraits. Could sure.
I mean, this is kind of a deeper conversation about art.
It's a direct analog to what you're saying about acting. So you get the analog, right?
It might all be art, but I do place a higher level of respect, I personally, on something that comes out of thin air, your imagination, or even your memory, I guess, to a lesser degree, but something that's right in front of you. This is why they do classes where they teach you how to draw a model, That's more of a skill that you learn, and then your art is what you do with it,
Yeah, but again,
you're only making my point as it relates to acting.
Right, you are making his point. Maybe you're right. Related to acting. Sort of. As I said before, I don't agree, though. I think, again, when you're using when it's a still life or something like that, you are placing these objects as the way you imagine.
In a classroom, though, setting, right?
But that's a classroom.
Well, that's so you're training.
That's your training, though.
So you can learn skills.
And then even in that way, you are interpreting it. You might be focusing on a specific part more than somebody else might,
Look,
for instance, it does come from your personal, interpretation of it somehow,
Okay, but I do want to bring up the example of auditions where you have to do, to get the part, you have to do really well in the audition. And
sure.
Lots of people, in our experience especially, we don't have enough time to
invest much time.
We don't have enough time or reason to invest hours and hours of learning the backstory of a character. We basically just have to come up with the most inventive ways of delivering these lines, you know? And it really is pretend. There's not very much emotion. But sometimes we will get to like specifics where we move our hand a certain way or something like that. And in that sense, you're kind of doing a Stanislavski thing where you're physicalizing the role. And Max and I do auditions together a lot, and we have to react to each other. And those reactions feel natural and real if your partner is delivering them well. But I will say auditions rarely, if ever, are investing our own emotions into it, and we're not becoming the character. We are maybe living in the moment, but we're not becoming the character. And some of the best auditions I've seen on tape are from kids who don't know the first thing about.
Well, this is all anecdotal. Yeah, for every good William H. Macy, there's whatever.
I know. I think what Nikon was trying to say.
It's whatever works for you.
We say whatever works. He doesn't.
Whatever,
he's not
gets the gig.
He's not saying one is better than the other.
I'm also saying
you're saying that.
I am also saying
one is better than the other.
No, Nikki is saying one is better than the other. Whatever gets the job done.
Whatever gets the job done.
Look, I agree. I agree that whatever gets the job done is fine, but case in point with the Daniel Day-Lewis situation in Hamlet. He couldn't get the job done because of this method of acting that he was employing.
Or because the theater was haunted. We don't know.
Yeah, or the theater was haunted.
No,
or
I'm just kidding.
Kooky.
I'm joking, obviously.
I think that's somewhat of a stain on his career that he can't do that kind of stuff on stage, right? I mean, wouldn't you say? I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't, but...
I think it's like, okay, it's part of being a human. It's a hilarious episode. And
I mean, I think Heath Ledger was also a method actor, by the way, and I think him. I mean, I don't know what they. I don't know what it. I don't know the actual story behind his death.
Yeah, and it's like, but for every Heath Ledger, there are all the other actors who didn't kill themselves. You know, it's like
let's not speculate on this, Max.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, yes, whatever works, and certainly Jeremy Strong is very good in Succession.
But maybe he's also just an asshole.
No, like, but also it takes away. It also, yes, you're right, Nikon. Maybe he's not a jerk, but maybe he's just a serious kind of guy. Actually,
maybe he's a serious kind of guy. Maybe
I've seen him in interviews, and he seems pretty pretentious.
No, and I didn't mean
he
it
says
as
things
a value
in a very
judgment.
Measured way, and it seems like he's really.
Some people are just
over serious.
Okay. And that's okay too. And okay, he doesn't want to have fun the way Brian Cox wants to have fun on set, which, you know, I think you're kind of robbing yourself of an experience, but okay, that's who you are. And maybe he's just using the method as an excuse for being a jerk, you know? Or like that's his.
Now we're really speculating here. We don't know.
Well,
sure,
yeah,
but
maybe.
Like, you know.
maybe Daniel Day-Lewis. Method as a scapegoat, but really what happened was like
he didn't
want
to
get out of this place somehow. I don't like
exactly. There's a ghost. Yeah. There's a ghost.
I mean,
and it's like,
he just doesn't
and when
like
I say
talking
jerk,
to other people,
when I say jerk or asshole, I don't like this. Some of my best friends in the world are assholes. You know, it's like I might like Jeremy Strong, even though I might think of him as an asshole.
Sure. Hey, look, all I'm saying is, yes, I agree. Whatever works is fine, but it does.
Steve Buscemi is a method actor.
It does
by the way.
Annoy me.
Oh,
really?
He's great. He's a method actor.
Game over.
He's great. And I think he has fun on projects. He seems like a funny, fun guy to hang out with. Actually,
I mean,
too.
To what degree is he a Strasberg method actor?
I believe
what
do you mean? He is a Strasberg method. I think he's part of the Actors Studio, I believe.
What's the etymology of alls I'm saying? What's that?
All's well that ends well.
All's I'm saying.
All All is I'm saying.
All is it's, I'm saying. I don't know.
All you're trying to say all that I'm saying is, right? So it's all's.
Oh, all that I'm saying is. That's right. All that I'm saying is.
No, but you say all's I'm saying is. So is. Okay, so all's I'm saying. What's the etymology there?
Well, what is the.
We're like, where's the F for the S? Where does the S come from?
Right. I think all that is. All that I am, all that.
All that it is.
All that it is. All that it is. All that it is, I am saying is. That seems weird, right?
Well, that's why you go Alzheimer.
Alzheimer's.
Well, but also, look, yeah, anyway.
Okay. Look, I do. Let's just close this up, okay? Look, okay. I agree. Whatever works and it's fine. Some of our best actors employ a very serious, style of acting that can be a big turnoff to their cast members and so on and so forth. And lots of actors, like myself, take bits and pieces from different teachings and methods to kind of do what I do, you know, to do what I do on stage and on screen. But
you know what?
I do that- think that from a theoretical standpoint, if you're a very serious Lee Strasberg method actor, you're robbing yourself some level of fun in this art, in enjoying your art. And I don't know, I think that's a shame.
All right, well, I would agree with that. It's a shame for anybody to do something for a living and not have as much fun as they possibly can, but that's not what everybody's seeking in life or in work. I think what you just said is a great way to end it.
I did want to say one last thing.
Well, I think the best thing you can do is edify yourself with as many different methods and pick and choose from the and in all forms of work and art and all that kind of stuff, and leverage the aspects of each that work best for you. And maybe if you're Daniel Day-Lewis, the thing that all of those things combined always return to the Lee Strasberg method, and you can't argue with the results.
Well,
and I include the Macbeth episode in that because that was probably
Hamlet
one hell of a show. Hamlet, sorry. That was probably one hell of a show.
I think to be honest, he's a bit overrated as an actor personally.
I've loved everything he's done, and it's like there isn't a single thing I've seen him in that I wasn't like, yeah, that was awesome. And it's not like, oh my God, he's embodying the blah blah blah. It's like, all right, that was a cool performance, and you know, There Will Be Blood is one of my favorite movies of all time. I don't care how he got there. I liked what he did, you know.
So this is what I want to end with. When Lee Strasberg died, Stella Adler found out the news while she was teaching a class, and she said the following, I'm paraphrasing, "Let us all take a moment of silence to remember Lee Strasberg. He was an acting teacher to a lot of different people, a lot of successful actors. He's done so much damage to the world of acting that'll take another 100 years to clean up the mess that he made."
That's just some lady's opinion. Like, so she doesn't speak. That's not like an objective.
No, I know. I just wanted to end with that because I thought okay, it was funny.
But like, that's not. All right, fine. Okay, sure. Okay, lady.
But yeah, you know, it's interesting. I used to think about all this stuff, but when I actually put everything into practice in the real world of acting, I guess, Max, what do we do the most? We don't. I mean, this is different for everybody, and I guess we're mainly doing comedic roles these days. But you know, we
really what the best thing to do is. I mean, this is just personally. I just think just memorize your lines as best as possible, like keep repeating them as much as possible until it just becomes second nature.
That's what Anthony Hopkins does.
By just making it second nature, you start to embody the role actually, because you can actually just, you can play around with it. You can kind of just, it's almost it almost becomes the way you start speak, you know, you start to just You're able to just kind of be natural with it, I think, you know?
When you opened, Nikki, saying, talking about, like, distinguishing from the British, the traditional British actors, is that their method? Just what you just
said,
I
don't know enough about the history of British acting to make a full-on statement about that. I mean, I could bring up what Diderot said, and he's French, about what acting should be, and it was basically like, you're there to pull the wool over the audience's eyes. There should be no real emotion invested in your performance. But that's what I meant when I said...
And that's just some guy.
That's some guy. And also the French are kind of, especially with regards to comedy, are known to be really big and broad.
We're not talking about comedy.
These are all opinions. And, you know, I think, yeah.
Okay, we can agree on this, that whatever works...
Whatever works, works. And... It's always a good idea to learn different techniques and see what works best.
Whatever works, the Woody Allen film starring Larry David. All right. Well, this has been a fine episode of Splitting Hairs with Max, Nikki, and Nikon. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already done so, and hit the like button, and... please rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on.
That's right, Nikki.
And that's right, Max.
And that's right, Nico. Bye, everybody. Please keep tuning in.